My name's Stephanie and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 23rd, 1994. No applause necessary. It's actually God who came into my life and separated me from alcohol and anything else. And I'm grateful to my higher power today for that. Anyway, I am so grateful to be able to present today Step 12. I absolutely love Step 12. I love all the steps. Just love the steps. And I have gum in my mouth because it's kind of hot in here and I don't want to get dry throat, so you'll see me chewing. I just want to share a little bit about my experience. I probably have a story very similar to a lot of you. I know a lot of you women over here in a treatment center. I went through a treatment center down in Ventura County. I spent 90 days in there. That's how I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, way back in the beginning, there were no treatment centers. And actually, a lot of people got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous just out of this book, you know, because there were only a few people doing it. We had the co-founders, Bill and Bob, right? And they started out by carrying this message of hope, this spiritual message. They had recovered, you know. Most of the time, way back then, I just want to give you like a little picture of what that looked like. Way back then, alcoholics like me, of the hopeless variety, right, wanting to stop but I couldn't, would be locked up in an institution. Not to say I haven't been, but forever. And would be, you know, put in jails or die. And so this was the way that many, many alcoholics lived before this spiritual program came to light, you know. So anyway, Bill and Bob and the first 100 recovered alcoholics put together this book. And I know sometimes it makes people uncomfortable to hear that word recovered, but the thing is that I like that word because truthfully, I used to always say, my name's Stephanie and I'm a recovering alcoholic. And you know what that means to me? It means that I'm still sick. And I was sick in AA for a really long time, okay? So it was fine for me to say I'm recovering. So anyway, it says here on the very first page, the title page, how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism, right? So they only had 100 people in AA. So what they did is they put this plan of action, our recovery plan, they wrote it down. And they mailed this book out to anyone that was interested, right? And so this is the plan of action. It's the precise plan of action. This is what I use to take someone through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? The 12 and 12 came along much, much later. So I don't really use that book. That's really more like an opinion, right, that the co-founder had. I don't use Hazelton guides. I don't use any of that. I've had experience with those things. They didn't work for me, okay? And like Bill said, this is my experience, right? So many people have used those things and they worked, right? For a hopeless alcoholic like me, I actually have to do it like Bill and Bob in the first 100. So that's what I've done. And, oh gosh, okay. I'm getting a little stressed. Anyway. The thing is this, the funny thing about the my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, I came in to that recovery home. You know, God really, I used to think all along that I was the one who actually went in there and I got sober, you know, by doing some things. But I come to realize much later on in my sobriety, on my journey, that that's not the truth, you know, that God really removed my obsession for alcohol, and that I was in that recovery home because of my higher power, you know, and nothing else, nothing else. So the thing is, though, is that when I went in there, people immediately told me, because I started going to AA, you know how they make you go to meetings and stuff? Like, you're in there, and they're like, okay, this is what you're going to do. You're going to do, like, 2 or 3 meetings a day. So I had to go, right? Because I... where I was going. And these people in the Alcoholics Anonymous meetings were just saying, welcome, Stephanie, you belong here. This is where you belong. You're an alcoholic, and thank God you're here. And truthfully, I had nowhere else to go. I had nowhere else to go. So I was so happy to be in AA. And I was convinced I was an alcoholic because everyone else was telling me I was. So I'm like, yes, you're right, I am. And I had some other issues too, as well, but this is an AA meeting, you know. And I went, you know, you get to go to NA, you get to go to AA. Well, I just chose to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where I, you know, where I ended up. And so I'm journeying along in my path. I got a sponsor who had a ton of time, because I thought that was impressive, right? I'm like, I'm going to choose her. She's got 20 years. I didn't care really about, you know, what she was doing. If she was walking, nothing. I'm just like, she's got time. That's who I want. So I chose her, and she was an awesome woman. She had a great relationship with God. And she was my sponsor for many, many years. She ended up passing away, dying of cancer. She did the best she could. You know, she showed me what she was shown in this program. Anyway, I've been going along in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm doing everything that they're telling me to do, right? I'm on the H&I committee. I take a panel out to Youth Authority, like, once a week. I drive newcomers to meetings all the time. I'm doing all these things that I think is the 12th step of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Being helpful is my only aim, so this is how I'm helpful. I'm driving newcomers around. Sometimes I let people stay the night at my house, right? That's helpful. Sometimes I give people money. That's helpful. I'm the cake person. I'm being of service, right? I'm the secretary. I'm the treasurer. I'm the H&I person. I'm doing all these things. Well, you know what happened after years of doing that? It's like I was empty inside, you know? I'm walking around in Alcoholics Anonymous, okay, with quite a bit of time. And with an ego the size of this church, and I don't mean just this little room, I mean like this whole entire church. And, yeah, okay, so I am getting sick, because the whole thing is that I'm thinking that I am keeping myself sober. See, that was the whole thing. That whole idea that I had way back then when I first went into the recovery home was that God got me there. But that was soon replaced by all these ideas of, if you do this, you will stay sober, okay? If you do this, you will stay sober. You know what that sets up in my mind? This is what it sets up. Okay, I'm doing this, right? I'm staying sober, okay? She's not. That's why she goes out, right? She's not. That's why she's all over with, you know, doing whatever she's doing, okay? So I'm sitting there in a place of judgment, okay? I don't think that's who God wants me to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I really don't. I know today that as a person working with people coming in or people that are new, people who haven't experienced the first five steps, that we're on level playing ground, actually. You know, this is really who my higher power wants me to be. I don't get to go in there with like, hey, I've got all this time and I'm really cool. Because truthfully, if you guys walk with me in life, you might think, oh, you know, sometimes, because I'm not perfect. I'm human. So I don't really want to, I don't want to do those things that I used to do before I actually had an experience with this book. And a lot of those things are this, and I want to tell you why no women in Alcoholics Anonymous approached me for help, or if they did, they were super sick, because I had like 10 years, 12 years, 13 years, 14 years, 15 years, right? No one was, people, maybe one or two the whole time, okay? And I love to share this because I used to think, hey, it's because I'm young. I came in young, right? People aren't asking me because they want to be with the older women. Well, at 35, that really doesn't work out anymore in my mind, right? It's like there may be another reason, okay? But pretty soon I'm just thinking, F them. That's my attitude. Of course, people should want what I have, right? My life was in the garbage can in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I was just walking around, and I was sick as hell. And if I was a new woman coming in, I'd stay as far away from me as I possibly could, because you could just feel the hate and, like, judgment coming off of me, you know? So, anyway, I happened onto this group. They were sharing some foreign ideas. I just call them foreign ideas because I hadn't really heard these ideas presented in Alcoholics Anonymous before. I walked in the room. They were like, Stephanie, consider that maybe you aren't an alcoholic, and let's go through the book the way the co-founders set it up, right, to see if you are. And we're going to do a thorough step one. And I was like, what are these people talking about? This is so weird. I mean, I've been in AA forever. Now you want me to consider this, right? And I was thinking, okay, whatever, because I was dying, right? I was willing to do whatever. I was willing to do, although I still had things going in my mind that were saying, these people are wrong. They don't know what they're talking about. They're egotistical. I stayed anyway because I was sick and dying in sobriety, okay? So they showed me many, many things in this book. And it's been about 2.5 years since I've happened onto this experience, my new experience. And it hasn't been easy, you know. It says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's simple, but it isn't easy. Because what it requires is me to lay aside some old ideas, you know, and to be... It's like they talk about facing a decision. The decision is to remain like wanting to die and drunk or to choose the spiritual path. Now, that seems funny, right? Because you would think, of course I'm going to choose the spiritual path, right? But for someone like me who's a hopeless alcoholic, I'm thinking, no, I can't do that. No, I'm good. I got control of this disease, right? I don't need that. I mean, I can prove to myself over and over again that in or out of sobriety, I can be normal if I'm out getting, you know, drunk or whatever I'm doing, that I can continue to do that. And I can manage it. And even if I stop doing it for a little while, it's like all of a sudden that thought creeps in again that, you know what, last time when you were faced with all that prison time and stuff, that wasn't so bad. You're going to be fine. Like, forget about that. Just, you can handle it. You're just going to have a couple drinks. Well, it never turned out that way, right? Anyway, my whole point is this. My higher power actually... I had a super deep and effective experience with step one and got to concede to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, okay? And so I was able, not me, but my higher power gave me the power to go through the rest of the steps, okay? And since I've been on this journey, since about step four, I have had so many women approach me for help. And I'm not saying that to be egotistical. I'm saying that because it's like, no one asked me for 12 years, you know? Nobody. 15 years, I mean. Nobody. And because I have gone through this book the way that the co-founders intended and have had this deep and effective experience, it's like God's bringing me women, you know? And guess what? When I get to sit down with these people and I have that spiritual experience with them sitting across from me, there's nothing better in my life than that. And I totally understand what this book is talking about. It says the 12th step is a vital necessity. It's something that we have to do in order to live and not to drink. Okay, so this is what I do in my life. This, and that's why I'm here today. I want to share on this step. And I hope that some of you out there, you know, can learn some things. So I'm going to share a little bit out of the book about some things that might interest you. I don't know if you've heard them before. I know I didn't. 15 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, sitting at the table, never heard any of this crap, okay? I read some of it, didn't get it at all. So one of the things I want to point you to is on page 18. Oh, you guys don't have a book, and I'm sorry. If I was a millionaire, I'd buy everyone a book and, like, so you could follow along. So you'll have to trust me, or you can jot the page down. On page 18,
it refers to who I'm supposed to be, you know, as someone can come to you for help. I'm not going to necessarily say sponsor because I don't particularly think that's a great word. And like I said, it sets up that relationship one more time than I'm up here and they're down there. I'm the sponsor, they're the sponsee, I'm way up here, they're down here, right? It actually says in here that they're my protege, they're my friend, right? So that's how who I can, the people that I'm taking through the work, we're friends. That's how we're doing it, okay? So, So this is what can help you to look and see if the person that you want to work with is actually a man with an answer, right? Because you want someone who has an answer. So, on page 18 it says, okay, but the ex-problem drinker who has found the solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. So the whole thing is that, I want someone who's actually had an experience going through this book, who's walking around and has had a spiritual experience, okay? Then it says that the man who is making the approach has had the same difficulty, right? So it's important to me when I'm sitting down with someone to actually make sure that they're a hopeless alcoholic. And, you know, sometimes people aren't. Or sometimes people are and they can't see it. And at that point in time, the book instructs me to allow them to go on their path without me. I'm not here to force anyone into sobriety or my way of thinking. I'm not going to do that. If someone's desperate and dying like I was, they're going to just come and ask for help, and they're going to stay, you know, engaged in this process. Then it says here that he obviously knows what he's talking about. Obviously, you don't want to be with someone who has similar experience as another one. If I can drink to get loaded every single time, right, and I can pull that off, that actually means that I probably have some power, choice, and control over the booze, right? So if you're looking for someone like that, it's not me. I'm actually the type of alcoholic who thinks in my mind, okay, I can drink just this one, and then I'm going to go to work, right? But you know what happens is I drink, and I can't show up because I continue to drink, and all of a sudden I'm hiding out from the employer, right, saying, oh, Jesus Christ. So this is the kind of person I need to take me through to work, right? Someone, a man who understands, right? Obviously knows what he's talking about. That his whole deportment means like behavior and demeanor, shouts to the new prospect that he is a man with a real answer. That he has no attitude of holier than thou, remember? Right? Okay. That there are no fees to pay, so you don't have to mow my lawn and you don't have to take care of my kids. You don't have to buy me coffee. You don't have to take me to breakfast, okay? This is something that I'm doing as part of the spiritual path. No fees to pay, okay? By the way, you can pay fees in other ways. Maybe, you know, go on a guilt trip that I've given you. If you're paying with some guilt, paying with emotion, right? If you're not doing what I tell you to do, these are ways that you have to pay, okay? I'm not going to do that. I used to do that. I love to do that. I want to tell everyone what to do, right? I don't do that anymore. I mean, I do sometimes, but with the person I'm working with, I don't. Okay. Okay. No axes to grind. So I have a history of axe grinding here in Tulare County in Visalia Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been extremely axe grindy in the past because I happened onto this new experience and I thought to myself, everyone needs to do it my way, right, when I first came into this because I didn't really have a good understanding. That's what axe grinding means, you have a point to prove. So my point would be, if you don't do it this way, then you're doing it the wrong way. But I've come to find out, right, that in the 12th step, if you actually read the instructions,
It doesn't say that. People are free to choose to do what they want if it works for them to have a closer relationship with the higher power. This is my answer. This is the answer that I was shown, and it's an answer for me. It works. It's worked, you know. And then it says here, no access to grind. And I skipped this one. Nothing would ever except a sincere desire to be helpful. No people to please. No lectures to be endured, right? You guys don't want to call me up and be like, I feel like this or that, and I'm going to sit there and give you a long lecture, right? It's you placing your dependence on me for help. And the whole key to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is for the new man, or me, Stephanie, to place my dependence on a higher power, right? And that will actually solve, that's the solution to all these problems I have in my life. Okay, so hopefully I won't be lecturing people. It says, these are the conditions we have found most effective. And I love using this page as a guide. I always show it to anybody that I'm working with. And I say to them, you know, if you feel like at any point in time that you know, I'm not presenting what's on this page, feel free to bring it up with me, you know, because I really always try to do what's outlined in this book. I don't really like to veer far from it because I can get off into my own opinions, and it's not helpful or effective. It tells me that over and over again in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a precise plan of action. It's not Stephanie's plan of action, okay? I want to tell you some things that have not worked for me in the sponsor or, like, you know, the person. And I'm going to say sponsor and sponsee relationship because that's actually what it was for me in the beginning. So if I said to my sponsor, hey, she goes, Stephanie, you need to go to 3 meetings a week, do church, you know, take 3 newcomers to a meeting, blah, 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 do all this stuff, right? And if I didn't do it, then I would call her up and I'd feel shame and guilt, or I wouldn't call her. I'd try to avoid her because I'm thinking, crap, I'm not doing what she tells me to do. Well, you know what? I don't do any of that. I don't tell people to call me every day. Because it doesn't tell me, it does not instruct me to do that in this book. How I present, how I work with other people is I sit down with them and we read this book line by line. And I give them and show them every instruction that's in this book. And I want to tell you, there's many women who have been in the homes that all of you have been in. And their lives are changing. You know that? And I get to see it. It's like so emotional for me because they were hopeless and dying, going into new visions, going into new hope, you know? And not all of them have stayed. A lot of them have sat down with me and then they've gone. But some of them have hung in and they remain on this path and their lives are changing. And you know what? It's not because of me. It's not because of me. God just uses me as a little instrument, right? I get to be an instrument because I've had this experience, and I get to show other women exactly how to have that same experience and get to this freedom. I don't have to call someone every day. You know, I mean, I had 10 years sober, and my sponsor was like, call me. I'm all, really? Jesus, can I make a decision without you? You know? It's like, I don't want to live that way. I want that freedom, you know, and the promises that are in this book. I'm not talking about the 9th step promises or the 12 promises, by the way, because that's all whatever, in my opinion, okay? There are promises for every single step in this book. So if you're at step 1, you're getting promises. 2 promises, 3 promises, 4 promises, 5 promises, right? All of those promises have come true in my life, and I have the gift. My higher power has given me the gift to watch everyone else around me who's going through this work get those promises too. I have a home group who's very involved in this way of living, and I mean way of living, okay? We don't do it and talk in the group and then go out and, like, beat the kid. We don't do that, you know? Or maybe if we do, we actually get to look at that and say, this is not who God wants me to be. This isn't working, right? Because we've done some thorough work. So it's so awesome to be a part of this fellowship today. I was never a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like I was always on the outer edge because I hadn't really gone through this thing. Not line by line, not the way it is in the book, you know? And today, it's like I have a fellowship that's grown up around me, right? That I can be a part of. We all are in agreement, like it's called brotherly and harmonious action in doing this work. And the journey that I'm on today is so amazing. And I want to tell you, like on the 4th of July, I'll just wrap this up. I've had the opportunity to work with people who are still just a little bit loaded. And I had someone call my boyfriend on the 4th of July and ask for help. It was a woman. And I had plans. I had plans, okay? And she was like, hey, can you help me? I'm dying. And I'm thinking, what? It's the 4th of July, really? No. And why are you calling him? Well, she didn't have my number, you know. So I was like, fine, I'll go. I was pissed. Really, I was pissed, but I prayed to God. Because I have a daughter today, you know, and I was like, this is all about us, our plans, this and that. But you know what? I went, and I tried to find that person a place to stay. And, you know, whether she's connected or not, whether she calls me for help again or not, that's none of my business, okay? But in that moment and through doing that, I learned a lot of things, too, because I was kind of presenting the spiritual part of the program a little too soon. And when working with others in the very beginning, we really focus just on step one, which is the craving and the obsession. You don't go too much further than that. See, these are things that I've learned as I've gone through, you know, and I was doing that. But, you know, that person has been calling me since that time, like here and there, just to update me on how she's doing. She doesn't have to do stuff my way. That's okay. I'm glad that she's not loaded today. But the thing is, I turned to God in that moment, and I was able to be there for that person. And, you know, that actually is the whole point of the 12 steps, is to be there and to show up when my higher power asks me to, no matter what's going on, you know. And after I left there, it wasn't like, oh, hey, I gave up the 4th of July. Oh, hey, I'm like the greatest person. Oh, hey, blah, blah, blah. No, I didn't go around and tell everyone, guess what I did on the 4th of July. No, I actually sat there and I thought, crap, you know what? I was kind of like a B on the 4th of July, because when this woman approached me, I was saying, oh, hell no, I don't want to help you. That's not a good attitude to have. So I continue to get to learn these new experiences, you know? And, I mean, I did a huge outline on the 12th step. 30 minutes is not enough for me to cover it. I could go on for hours. I was hoping Bill had actually asked me to run the whole thing, but he didn't. So I have to share my time. So anyway, I just want, let me see if I can just, I just want to say to anybody who's out there who hasn't had an experience, and I don't like to say anyone who's new, because a lot of times we think of people who are new with less than 30 days. But I want to let you know that I was new with 15 years of sobriety, okay? So I want to just say to anyone out there who's new, you know, if you're really looking for an answer and you feel hopeless, to get connected and really look through this book. By the way, this book, the plan of action in here, it promises me that it's going to solve all of my problems, every single problem. Okay, and the solution is the higher power, and I just hope that all of you can find someone who has an answer, like we talked about on page 18, you know, find someone who can offer you this solution, and I hope that you don't have to die, but if you're not ready, and you're not willing, and you have to go back out and experiment, in the book it gives us instructions that people can do that too. And I'm just so grateful that I didn't have to go and do that, you know, that I've been blessed with this experience. And step 12 is the foundations, like the foundation stone in my recovery, you know. Step 1 is the foundation in my recovery. Step 12 is also the continuing foundation in my recovery. And as I go through this process with new people, I continue to have experiences and experiences. And if you would have known me 2.5 years ago, and you could see the way that my life was today, I still have difficulties, you know, but my higher power showed me how to rise above most of those difficulties and walk in there with a whole new attitude. My life today is just completely different. And I'm so grateful to have people like Bill continue to ask me back, and for all of you to be here. I know a lot of you aren't, you know, you don't have a choice. They tell you you're coming, you're here. But I'm grateful that you're here. And especially to the people like this gentleman who said he just got out today, you know, I'm glad that you're here to be able to hear some of this stuff. And if anyone's interested, you can always come to my home group. It's on Bridge Street, 526 North Bridge Street, 7 p.m. Thursday nights, primary purpose group. If you're looking for an answer, it's, you know, it's in that room. So if you want some help, you can talk to me after this meeting. Thank you so much for allowing me to share my experience. I wish I could have gone more into, you know, all the stuff that I had written down, but any questions I'll be happy to answer as well. Thanks.
Well, you could sit right there. Sit right there. Yeah.
Thank you.
Are we doing questions?
We'll do them afterwards.
Oh.
Thank you. Hey, I'm a clever alcoholic. And see, I knew that if I asked everybody to move forward, it wouldn't work. So here's what I'm going to do. We're going to move towards you. Would please help me to offer a very warm welcome to our second panelist, Bobby.
My name is Bobby. I'm an addict.
I want to thank Bill for inviting me to speak on the 12th step. You know, he said share for like 30 minutes, and but the first thought in my mind was like, I don't know if I got 30 minutes, right? But my experience tells me that sometimes they have to tell me to shut up. So it's like, thanks, Stephanie. I really appreciate what you had to say. My experience in early recovery. Took a lot of persistence, because I didn't really come in here to quit using drugs or drinking alcohol. I just came in here to like take a break. So this process that has happened in my recovery is just that. It's a process. I didn't understand that at the beginning. Probably took me about 5 years to understand what the process was all about. Stephanie touched on a lot of stuff that I have similar experience with too as well. And, when I first came into the program, my first experience was with Alcoholics Anonymous. I was also in a recovery home, and that's where they used to make us go to a lot of meetings. I had was looking for differences, and so, I didn't really relate to what was going on, because I really didn't plan on quitting. You know, that really wasn't my intention when I came here. But today, I'm really grateful. My clean date is August 6th of 1988, so I just celebrated it this day. I'd like to tell you that I got clean and sober initially in the very beginning, but that, you know, when you have a reservation, like, I think I can go back out and do it again, I got the results that you guys kept talking about. The difference was that I'd been to enough meetings that I'd heard the message. You know, and the message for me was not about quitting. It was about the hope that you guys were sharing in meetings about there things could be different. Because, you know, and I'm sure all of us have probably never come in here because things were going really well, right? So, you know, all that stuff that happens to everybody happened to me too, you know. But the insanity of the whole thing was that I didn't, I was so much in denial, I didn't really, really want to express that. Matter of fact, my denial was based on fear. You know, drugs and alcohol had worked for me for a long period of time, and I wasn't really ready to accept the fact that there was some other way to be able to do this without doing that. So I thought by taking this little break that eventually I could go back out and be successful at what I was doing. But what I heard was I heard the message of hope, and what it was, people were talking about how their lives had changed, and so I kind of like focused on that. So when I relapsed, the very first thought that came into my mind right after I took this hit off the pipe was that this is a progressive disease, because the feeling was the same. It still was about the fear and the hopelessness, and so I was glad that in the very beginning I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I had an opportunity to be able to go to other meetings as well, Narcotics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous at the time. So there was a lot of different programs that I attempted to go to. My foundation was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, but, you know, I, at some point in time in my recovery, I got an opportunity to be able to make a choice about where I felt most comfortable. And so I chose to be in Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm not pitching Narcotics Anonymous. I'm just saying that's what my experience has been. And so, you know, I like the fact of what she was talking about. A lot of our experiences are pretty much the same. In the very beginning, when I came into the program, there were a lot of people who had the best of intentions. Today, I can look back at that and see that people were actually trying to tell me that they loved me, but it was coming across in a different way. You know, it's like, you need to do this, right? And so what that set up for me was it set up a lot of resistance. Number one, I didn't want to quit. Number two is that I didn't want to be told what to do. And so, but I thank those people today, because what they did, they got my attention. They knew that I was throwing bull out there, right? And that I didn't have anything to share, so they would tell me things like, shut up and sit down, right? Because you don't really know anything. And so what that did, that developed a resentment, which I got a chance to put on my A-step list. You know, anyway, we're talking about the 12-step here. I want to kind of emphasize that for me, what the 12-step has been this process that's been happening to me all along since I've been in recovery. And that is that my understanding of what this means, basically the literature, right, and my experiences has worked on growing. Teddy and I were talking about that a little bit earlier today. My perception of what things are in the very beginning were distorted, and I tried to operate on that kind of thinking system as a way to make good decisions, right? And thank God for the meetings, because, you know, had I not gone to a lot of the meetings, I didn't hear the message. You know, I read a meditation book every day. Today's meditation talked about active listening. I wasn't capable of active listening in the very beginning, and so it was real difficult for me to perceive what the message was. All I could focus on in the very beginning was hope. You know, you guys were talking about your lives changing, and the whole foundation behind that was around the steps. And then I got to a point where I finally had to surrender and say that, you know what, I am an addict, and that I have no power. See, I had trouble with that word power. That's what the basis of my whole fear was about I have to have the power. You know, I share the story a lot in my recovery about I was about 7 years old, and I had a really traumatic incident happen to me, and I was sitting in the closet hiding, and I remember asking God for help, you know, because nobody else was helping me. And so and I was in a lot of emotional and physical pain, and I remember asking him for help, and he didn't show up, I didn't think. So I made a decision, and it was through the literature and through the steps that were presented to me that I found this out. I didn't know that at the beginning, right? And so what I did is I made a decision to take my higher power out of my life and take control over things that were going on. That's the reason why I was in so much fear, because alcohol and drugs were no longer working for me anymore, and I had to face the fact that I had to accept some other way of living. And so when I finally had my last relapse on August 5th, I saw my higher power starting to work in my life. And really, I truly believe that my whole path today is really based on that. The point I really want to make at the very beginning is this, that Stephanie refers to the book, right? And it took me about probably 5 or 6 years to finally begin to understand. I read the book. The only difference was that my perception of what I was reading was totally, it was skewed. You know, what I read was using old thinking as a way of trying to apply what it was that I read. So everything was about resistance in the very beginning, right? Oh, yeah, but, right? Oh, no, I'm not going to do that, right? And so I didn't know that that was the beginning of the process. The process was that I had to stay here and keep coming here in order to begin to understand what this means. So, and I heard it best said, everything that I'm going to tell you today has nothing to do with me coming up with an original idea. Somebody has already shared that, and I'm just using that as a vehicle to say this is what makes me feel like I'm successful with my program. And most of it comes out of the book. If I give you no other advice, and I'm not here to give you advice, but I would suggest that you do what a speaker told me to do one time, and that was that I develop a personal relationship with what this is. And that means that I have to look at it, not necessarily in the way that you see it, but in the way that I can relate to it so that I can utilize this as a tool to continue not only to stay clean, but also to make changes in my life. Because really, to me, the 12 step is really about the change, you know. And I'm going to read out of the literature because it's important to me to let you know what it is that I see that I never saw before, you know. And everything in our literature talks about a spiritual awakening and applying spiritual principles. And so my understanding of that today is that it's really about how do I apply that. In the beginning, I didn't realize already having a spiritual awakening because I wasn't using drugs or doing alcohol. That was my very first spiritual awakening. I didn't even know I had it, right? And then there came a period of time where, like Stephanie talks about, where the obsession went away. And I didn't know what that was all about. That was a spiritual awakening for me, too. I remember realizing one day that I hadn't thought about using or drinking in a long time. And it wasn't like, you know, it happened just like that. It was like it happened throughout the process. And the process was that all I could do in the very beginning was just go to meetings and try and become an active listener. I don't know about for you, but the first 5 years of my recovery is really about trying to get the chatter to shut up so I could hear what it was that you were saying so that I could then make a good decision and apply it in my life. So the spiritual awakening happened really early on. I'm going to write or read you some notes that I wrote out on the 12 step when I was working through it the very first time. It says here that the spiritual awakening has some common elements, right? It's an end to loneliness. And so when I was working the steps, that little boy who was in that closet who made a decision that he had to take all the power began to set himself up for this kind of loneliness that I was living throughout my whole addiction. So that became, you know, I think she pointed out, it's like a promise, right? Today, I'm not that lonely person anymore. So that process has taken 24 years to come into place. It wasn't like it happened right away. I was still lonely in the first 5 years I was in recovery because I didn't know how not to do it. Now, I want to go back a little bit. My second spiritual awakening had to do with the fact that when I started being told what to do in the program, I resisted that because I was using old line thinking I could survive with all that stuff that I brought into recovery. And what I found out was that I had to surrender that. You know, the first step is about surrender. And it was not just the fact that I'm an addict and I can't stop using, but the fact that I have to surrender to everything. And so, you know, as I was working through the steps, I started beginning the understanding. The second thing it says in here is that it gives you a sense of direction in your life, right? Today I think I have that. And not that I'm cured, right? I do know that today that as a participating addict in recovery that I have a disease that's about to kill me, and this is going to be this way forever. You know, Teddy and I were talking about what our current status in recovery, and we were sharing pretty much the same thing, that this is an ongoing thing. So I always focus back on the process, right? What I understood in the beginning is not the same as what I understand today. I don't know how many days in a row I've been reading the Just for Today or pick up, in our case, the basic text or a step working guide or the big book or whatever, right? That the information somehow or another reads differently than it did when the 100 times or 1,000 times that I've read it before. And that has to do, I think, with the fact that as part of the process, that spiritual awakening has taken a period of time. You know, I don't think that I've completely spiritually awoken yet. I still have ego problems. I have, character defects that still pop up that I truly believe sometimes are going to fulfill that lie that I tried to believe forever, and that was going to work, right? But, you know, my higher power has a way of being able to show me how I need to be humiliated sometimes in order to be able to learn what humility really is. And that is that self-examination that I need to do almost every day, sometimes every minute, because I have to look at all the actions that I take. It says here, there's an increasing peace of mind. You know, there's a phrase that they use in recovery called serenity, right? I remember hearing that in the very beginning because they were teaching me how to do the serenity prayer, and I'm going, I don't know what that is, right? What is that? You know, and what I see as my spiritual awakening today is exactly how I feel today. You know, this year, more than any other year, I've probably been working on acceptance most of all. That is that it's really not about the things that I can control. It's really about accepting things the way that they really are, you know, and that is that it doesn't matter what's happening, good, bad, indifferent. It's like I just need to accept that that's the way it is. Any resistance to that is moving me away from that serenity that I feel. I can go to bed at night and feel okay with me, you know, because what I do is I look at the direction that everybody's giving me in those maintenance steps in 10, 11, and 12 and go, okay, I got to continue to do that every day, you know. I too did what Stephanie did, and that is that, you know, I don't want to come up here and talk about what's up here, because really the bottom line is that's what got me here to recovery. And so I try and go back to the thing that I know is the truth, and this is the truth. The words in the literature are the truth. The key is, what is my perception of it today? You know, because it's totally different, and that experience tells me that if I keep an open mind, that what will happen is that I'll continue to be teachable. There's a guy in the program that has now passed, but I remember, there's only one thing I remember about what he used to say, and that is that at some point in time in your recovery, you're going to become remarkably teachable. And for me, it usually is associated with pain first, right? So I got to get into pain first. But so what I try and do today is I try and say, okay, things are happening for a reason. And the reason is, has nothing to do with me. I don't try to manipulate that. So, and I try and share that experience with sponsees as we go. The other thing it says in here is a concern for others. You know, the core of my disease is self-centeredness. So getting outside myself and having concern for others is really the key. And thank God for those people in the very beginning who told me and were teaching me lessons about the 12-step early on. I probably had like 60 days clean when I went on my very first 12-step call with a sponsor. And I didn't know what a 12-step call was. I didn't know what I was doing there, other than he was trying to teach me along the way how you could open yourself up for a spiritual experience, you know. And he would tell me things like, come along with me, keep quiet, you don't know anything, they don't need to hear anything you have to say, right? And so, and I did that. And I thank God for doing that. Today, I'm a part of the hotline for Narcotics Anonymous, and I do 12-step calls because I like the payoff in what it was that he taught me how to do. He also required that I do a service position early on. And I did it for the wrong reason. I did it because I just wanted to be liked. You know, the bottom line, that's really what it was. I just wanted to be liked. I didn't like myself, so I thought it was important that you like me, so I just did it because it brought attention to me. And today, my motive is totally different. You know, the motive is that I'm getting a payoff from it, and it's about the spiritual awakening they talk about in the 12 step, and I like that, and I want to continue to get that, and I deserve it because I didn't think I deserved anything when I got here. So, it says here also the best insurance to relapse is to relapse prevention is by giving to others. So I was taught that early on. I just didn't know the reason why I was doing that. So, you know, the spiritual awakening that I've had since I've been in service has really been based on giving to others rather than taking myself. I was a taker when I first got here because really the bottom line is I didn't have any information about how to stay clean. I didn't have any information about how to live life. And I found that if I trusted the process and I trusted the people within the program, that what would happen is that I would get enough experience to be able to be in a place where I can be today around acceptance of the way things are. And so, you know, I made a lot of mistakes along the way. A lot of mistakes along the way. I still do. I'm still, like, Stephanie, I'm a human being. And I, you know, that took a long time for me to accept the fact that I could do that. You know, I was my own worst critic. And I had to do things better than everybody else, right? And I was trying to fill this hole within myself that never got filled until I learned about the 12 step. It's really about, that was the spiritual awakening for me. The spiritual awakening was around getting outside myself and working with others. You know, today I try and do as much of that as I can. You know, and this is not about ego. This is just about learning through recovery, through working the steps and taking direction that everybody has my best interest in mind. Not everybody, but I mean the majority of people in recovery have my best interest in mind. And I didn't believe that in the beginning. I thought that I needed to be in control of that. The best message is to provide an example. That's what it says here in the literature. Okay? And so that early experience that I had with sponsors telling me what to do had some value because it required me to surrender to the fact that they had my best interest in mind before I actually started accepting that. And then I progressively became at a point in time where I was responsible for my own recovery. You know, those suggestions I would get initially in the very beginning from him that I resisted were of some value. So I started making decisions on my own, good decisions. The very first thing that helped me with that was he used to tell me that the very first thought is wrong. And that's still true today. Because the very first thought that usually comes in my mind is that is a lie. You know, I'll wake up in the morning. I woke up this morning thinking, oh, God, I'm going to be late, right? God, it was 5:30 in the morning, right? Then I had to be I forgot what time it was, so I had to be here by 8:30. So I'm acting out on that first thought, and it still proves itself true. I found that the best way for me to be able to stay in a spiritual awakening is to wait. Sometimes it's just wait. Discard the very first thought and learn how to meditate a little bit more, get a conscious contact with a higher power initially in the very beginning, and then listen. Actively listening. Sometimes it's really not about, you know, the answer coming right away. Sometimes it'll be and pick up the phone and make a call and say, hey, what time does this thing really start? Right? You know, so it's, and then the answer comes. So, you know, in working with others, part of the process in the very beginning when I'm working with others is really to try and pass it on the way it was given to me. Sometimes I tweak it a little bit, but it's really about helping people make the right decisions by giving direction in terms of the way that they do things. And then let them on their own find out what their own personal spiritual awakening is going to be. When I first came in, I thought spiritual awakening had to do with what my mother used to do in church, you know? I had an experience that where my mother started talking in tongues, and I was going, whoa, I don't want to, you know, anything to do with this. So when I first read that, when I first came in, that's what my perception of a spiritual awakening was. What I didn't realize that the spiritual awakening really was around the freedom that I get by continuing not to use, not to drink, work with others, and continue to work the steps. And so, you know, that's basically how I do that. I want to point out one other thing here. And because it took me a long time to begin to understand what the purpose behind working the steps was. And really it was around trying to apply spiritual principles in my life. So the first part had to do with surrender, and the steps took me through all that, and eventually this is really where I try and put the focus of everything that I do today. These are the spiritual principles: hope, surrender, acceptance, honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. Those are the first three they talk to us about, right? Faith, tolerance, patience, humility, unconditional love, and sharing and caring. That's what the literature tells me. So everything that I put a test to for myself when I'm doing like a 10th step really has to do about, you know, which one of these spiritual principles did I apply today? Or which ones didn't I apply? You know, in that situation, could I have changed something so that I could have applied a different kind of spiritual principle? And what that gives to me is that the kind of like what the 12 steps says, and that is that how do we apply this in all areas of our lives? And so that's what I try to teach. I also use what's called the Step Working Guide, which is fairly new in Narcotics Anonymous with the people that I work with. But you know, when we set the foundation early on about what works for us, and we share that experience with the sponsees, we give them directions I give directions in terms of what my experience has been and why that's worked for me. Normally, by the time we get to the 12th step, it becomes a real simple mini 10th step. And it's really about, it's all about questions. What are you doing for someone else today? You know, what is your spiritual awakening? How are you applying that? And so, it's really about coming back and looking at what it is that I need to do in every area of my life. I'll share a little bit of experience with you about how that works. I remember I had about 8 months clean, and life showed up. It was like, and I still was struggling with trying to work through the steps. But, you know, my dad went into a coma. I spent like 30 days with him in the hospital every day. And I remember just before he was getting ready to pass, and I don't know if I did this out of guilt or shame or whatever, right? Because I had no idea what the 8th and 9th step were all about, other than it was a relief, right, to be able to do that. But I made a promise to him. I knew what was most important to him. What was really most important to him was my stepmother. You know, he would do anything for her, and I knew that. And so what I did is I made this promise to him, and maybe I probably made it to myself too as well. And that was, I promised him I would take care of her. Don't worry. It's okay for you to go ahead and pass. And shortly after that, I mean, within minutes, he went. And, you know, and I kind of like sloughed it off going, okay, you know, that ain't going to happen for a long period of time. Well, guess what? The last 2 years, it's been about that. And so what I've had to do with direction of my sponsor, I mean, with the help of my sponsor, is that I've been able to get through that too as well, because it's been really difficult trying to take care of somebody else. Heck, I don't even know how to take care of myself. You know, that's another spiritual awakening too. I was talking to Teddy about earlier too, is about how the longer I stay in recovery, I missed that part in the book where it talks about this is a spiritual and also a physical disease, right? And so, you know, even though I identified it in the 4th step, today it's really about, you know, am I taking my meds on time? Do I go to the doctor on time? Am I following the direction that the doctor's giving me? And there's always this kind of like certain amount of resistance, right? Especially when you walk up over there and there's like cinnamon rolls, and I'm a diabetic, by the way. So, you know, and I want to do those things, but then, you know, I've got a spiritual awakening that tells me I'm worth more than that. I'm really worth more than that. Do I do it perfectly? Absolutely not. You know, I too am like a human being, like Stephanie is too. That's another thing I had to have a spiritual awakening around too. I wouldn't allow myself to become a human being and make mistakes. That was intolerable for me. You know, but what I'm finding out is that that's not the key behind self-worth for me. The key behind self-worth for me is the path that I've been shown here in recovery, and that is around helping others. I'm not only on the hotline today, I'm also, and this is through the help of a sponsor too. I had about 6 months clean, and he told me I was going to go out to the prison and carry a message out there. And I was going, well, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never been to prison. What do I have to offer them? And he goes, it doesn't matter. Just come and be quiet and listen. And, 23 and a half years later, I'm still on an HMI panel, and I love doing it because it gets me outside of myself. There's never been a time where I don't feel grateful. Does that mean that I really would rather stay home and watch TV? Absolutely. But, I've got short-term memory loss about what that feels like when I go there and I actually actively listen to people who really want recovery and you know, I'm able to be there for them just like people were there for me. So, I don't know how much time that is, but basically that's really all I really wanted to share around a spiritual awakening. For me, it's really about continuing down this path, continuing the process, and believing in the fact that, I've got a higher power in my life today that allows me to be able to see things in a different light. You know, that little boy who abandoned God in that closet that day didn't realize that what God was really saying was, wait, I've got something better for you. And I found it. I found it here in Narcotics Anonymous and every other recovery program that's out there. And, I'm not here to say that you should be doing this program. Find your own path. You know, if you do nothing else, the thing that's worked for me is pick up a book, read it, right? And take whatever you need out of here as a way to be able to continue to work through your process in this recovery path that we're going down. And, with that, thanks for letting me share.